The photo on the front of both the Irish Independent and the Times is that of a jubilant Alexis Spiras, the leader of the Syriza party, after winning the Greek election. There's a very different and shocking picture on the front of the Irish Examiner, that of the badly bruised face of Anna Babula. The caption over the photo reads, "Why didn't the Gardaí want to investigate this?" Michael Clifford writes that a Garda investigation has been launched into a failure to properly investigate an allegation by a Polish woman that she was raped and sexually assaulted while being held against her will in her assailant's apartment. There's a full report inside that paper. And that paper also has news of Greece's election on its front page, reporting that the victory of the anti-austerity party in the election raises fears of a new Eurozone crisis. And it's that story that makes the lead for the Times and Independent, with the latter reporting that Greece is on a collision course with the rest of the EU. All the papers carry the story and report on the possible ramifications for Europe. And another story that gets plenty of attention this morning is that of the possible sale of Aer Lingus. The Times says that the government is unlikely to make any decision in relation to the state's shareholding in the airline until officials in Brussels make their views known. While the Independent reports that Irish Rail is planning a new line to allow intercity trains to travel directly to Dublin Airport from Cork, Limerick, Galway and Belfast. It looks at the impact of a takeover of Aer Lingus, saying the move could weaken the regional airport if services were reduced. And a poll carried out for that paper and Today FM has found that a third of women in their 30s say they have put off having children because of financial pressure. It also found that working women in the same age bracket were only half as likely as men to have had a recent pay rise. Paul Cullen, writing in the Times this morning, says that staff shortages may result in kidneys from Irish donors going abroad. The organs may have to be exported because of a lack of staff to transplant them to recipients here. And the Irish Daily Mail reports that up to 4,000 nurses face being struck off for refusal to pay their annual retention fee, which rose from 100 to 150 euro this year. It says the nurses have until the end of February to pay or face being struck off. And the lead for the Mail says that if there's a water problem in your area, it's better to live near a minister. According to its front page story, two-thirds of Irish Water's urgent maintenance work is being carried out in the constituencies of either ministers or junior ministers. And the Examiner reports that two county councils ran up debts of nearly 30 million euro, buying land for social housing schemes only for the sites to later be deemed unsuitable for residential development. And both that paper and the Independent report that the Construction Industry Federation is to meet the central bank today ahead of tomorrow's expected decision on mortgage deposit rules. The Federation is also expected to voice its concerns about the central bank's proposal to the IMF. And according to the Irish Daily Star, the government has paid almost 2 million euro on outside PR consultants and photography costs since being elected in 2011. The paper has a list of who spends what. And it appears that third level students were overpaid more than 4 million euro in grant money during the 2012-13 academic year. The Herald and the Examiner report that Susie, the body which oversees the payment of third level grants, has admitted the money was paid out in error and says it is currently seeking approval from the Department of Education to write off the total amount. And finally, one of the last surviving Irish veterans of the D-Day landings is to receive France's highest honour today. The Times reports that 93-year-old Michael Dalton will receive the Legion of Honour on board the French naval vessel Somme at Dublin Airport this afternoon. Mr. Dalton was a sub-lieutenant on a landing craft bringing Sherman tanks to Omaha Beach in the American sector on June the 6th, 1944.
Clodagh, thank you. It's 11 minutes past 7.
That's right, Gavin, and it's confirmed it's received an improved offer from British Airways owner IAG, as pretty much widely reported and expected over the weekend. Very brief statement to the stock exchange this morning, just saying the board of the company is considering the proposal. It comes in at total value of €2.55 per share. That's €2.50 per share plus a cash dividend of 5 cents per share, which is conditional on, among other things, an irrevocable commitment by the government to sell its 25% shareholding to IAG, which has already, remember, had two bids at €2.30 and €2.40 per share rejected by Aer Lingus. And RT's business editor David Murphy will have more on that story in around about 10 minutes time. Elsewhere, the French airline Europe Airpost is set to announce a new route between Dublin and Halifax, Nova Scotia until later this morning. It's understood Europe Air Post, a subsidiary of Irish-headquartered ASL Aviation, will begin serving the Canadian city from Dublin in July. It'll be one of 15 new services from Dublin Airport this year and the fourth new transatlantic service to be launched in 2015. The MBA programme at University College Dublin's Smurfit School is the only Irish representative in the Financial Times annual list of the top 100. The Smurfit School's MBA ranking is up 18 places to 73rd on the global list, published this morning, and up 3 places to 22nd on the European list. Irish expats working in the UK, the US, Australia and elsewhere are scrambling to send money back home to take advantage of current euro weakness. The single currency is at an 11-year low following last week's announcement by the European Central Bank of a programme to pump 60 billion euro a month into the economy through a series of asset purchases, including buying up large chunks of government debt. The Irish company Currency Fair has experienced record transaction levels over the past fortnight, handling double its normal volumes as Irish people working overseas look to lock in their gains by transferring foreign currency back to Ireland. They're getting even better bang for their buck this morning, the single currency down a third of 1% to $1.117 and currently trading at 74.5 pence sterling. And we'll have more on that currency story at 10 to 8.
Evan, there can be little doubting that Greece has sent a message to Europe: no to austerity, yes to change. The huge vote backing the left coalition known as Syriza puts pressure on it to deliver on its pre-election promises. RTE's Europe editor Tony Connolly is in Athens. We'll be speaking to him presently, but he's also been talking to people on the streets of the city last night.
We are extremely happy. We are hopeful. This is the word for us. We can't take it anymore. Greek people are not afraid anymore because we are at the minimum. We can't go any lower. So only hope is there for us, and I think that austerity measures should stop.
We're extremely happy today because we feel that change has begun, that history has knocked on our door, and I think that it's time for the state to change completely.
For us, it's very important that there are a lot of people from all over Europe, and we consider and we think that another Europe, we've been saying that this is possible, and we can see this Europe being here today with us. So, of course, Ireland, and we learned a lot about the situation there. We know there has been also quite a tough situation, and we call the people and we want them to be in our side, because Syriza is coming and it will be a threat for the political and economical elites, but not for the people.
You can't go to the market, so go to Mrs. Merkel or whoever is in charge, or the IMF or the Troika, as it's called, and you can't go there with a country that produces nothing. We produce nothing, and go and say, oh, I don't like the terms of the contract, so please, I don't like 2% that you give me the loan. I'm not going to pay. You can't do that.
Voters in Athens speaking to RTE's Tony Connolly last night, and Tony is on the line now. Tony, expectation has been built to an enormous level. The difficulty now will be delivering on it, won't it?
That's right, Fran. I mean, the first tricky business is to form a government. Syriza has just fallen short of an overall majority. They have 149 seats out of 300. They needed 151. So the business of forming a coalition begins right away. In fact, in about an hour's time, Alexis Tsipras, the leader of Syriza, is going to meet Panos Kamenos, who is the leader of the small independent Greeks party. Now, they are they're a fairly right-wing party on a lot of issues, but they have been resolutely anti-bailout and anti-EU, so there would be some common ground there. They work together in opposition to block the nomination of the Greek president, which was the crisis that triggered this election in the first place. He's also going to meet, after that, he's going to meet the leader of the small new party, Potami, that's Stavros Theodorakis. They are left-wing, anti-austerity, but they are in favour of Greece sticking to its obligations under the bailout. So that's going to be another option or avenue for Alexis Tsipras. He has 3 days to form a government. And after that, there will be a cabinet sworn in and then a vote of confidence in the new parliament within 15 days. But, you know, already there is a lot of expectation that the promises that he made during the election campaign will be difficult to keep once he gets into the real business of negotiating some kind of debt relief or concessions from the Eurozone. And it's going to come around quite soon because by mid-February, Greece will have to have reached agreement with the Troika to get the next phase of its bailout. I think it's the final phase, in fact, which they'll get in mid-February. Now, if there isn't agreement there, the ECB will no longer provide emergency funding for Greece, for Greek banks. So we could see a collision happening fairly soon.
Isn't that the challenge here? There are two issues. If the Greece holds firm and if he follows through on the pre-election language he was using, Europe has a problem, really. And also, if Europe continues to remain strong, he has a problem. So is it a who blinks first situation? Or do we have any idea how this is likely to play out?
Well, he certainly was moderating his rhetoric in the final days of the election campaign. And last night he talked about negotiating an agreement with his European partners, and he used the word collaboration. Having said that, there is a fairly hardline element to his party. This is a left-wing alliance. It's not a single party. And, I mean, if you read Syriza's manifesto, which it drew up in July 2013, a lot of it is fairly heady, hard-left kind of rhetoric. So he will have to keep an eye on that side of his party. Perhaps about 30% of his members would be on the ultra-left. For Europe, of course, Europe can't simply be cavalier about the size of the mandate that Greece has. It really depends on the kind of room for manoeuvre the European powers that be have. I mean, my instinct is that they will obviously look at things like lengthening the maturities of the loans that Greece has. It doesn't have a lot of room for manoeuvre in terms of the interest rates Greece pays because they're already very, very low. And Greece got a number of concessions on it, both interest rates and the maturities back in 2012. So there's not an awful lot of room for manoeuvre. Now, there was a letter sent to the Financial Times last week by 18 eminent economists, and one of their options was that Greece would get basically a repayment holiday until the economy began to grow to about 3 or 4%. So there are ideas out there, but whether there's the political will in countries like Germany and Finland and the Netherlands is another matter. And you have to remember as well that in Germany, Angela Merkel is facing a rising threat on to the right of her party with AfD, this New Deutschland party, which is very angry at concessions made to countries on the periphery. So Angela Merkel has less political room to manoeuvre, and especially after the quantitative easing decision last week, Germans are smarting at what they see are unacceptable threats to their particular vision of how the Eurozone should be run.
All right. Aer Lingus has confirmed it has received an improved takeover offer from IAG, that's the company who owned British Airways and run by the former boss of Aer Lingus, Willie Walsh. In a brief statement to the stock exchange this morning, Aer Lingus said it had received an offer of €2.55 per share and that its board was considering the revised proposal. The state holds just over a quarter of the airline. David Murphy, our business editor, is with us. Morning, David.
Good morning.
Not telling us anything we didn't already know or suspect. What happens next?
Well, in effect, actually, it is telling us one thing we didn't already know. I mean, there was a lot of speculation that, in fact, the board was going to recommend this proposal, but the board have not gone that far. They say they're considering the proposal. In the previous statements, what they've done is they've rejected the proposal. So clearly, this is getting a lot closer to what they're interested in terms of a share price. But as you mentioned, there's not a lot else there. There is obviously the other point they've made that the full offer would only really work if there is a commitment from the government to sell all of its shares and from Ryanair, who hold 29.9%, to sell all of its shares. So in a sense, what we can see is that this is a bit closer to what the board are looking for, But the only thing this statement deals with is the share price. There's nothing else under consideration here in terms of what would happen to the airline, the growth prospects for the airline, what would happen to the Heathrow slots. And the interesting thing about this is this was actually raised at a press briefing last Thursday by Michael O'Leary, the chief executive from Ryanair. He raised this obviously prior to today's statement, but he made the point that Aer Lingus, in terms of what could happen there, the only thing that can really be considered is actually the share price by all of the shareholders. And I think we can hear a little bit of what he said now.
It is against the law and takeover rules to make different offers to different shareholders. You can only make the same offer to every shareholder. So the only offer that can be made is, here's a price, Irish government, do you want it or don't you want it? The Irish government won't get any undertakings about Heathrow slots or anything else, because they can't be given to all shareholders equally. In actual fact, in many respects, if it's devaluing the value of Aer Lingus, you would be damaging the value of other shareholders. So all the political fuss and bluster about Heathrow slots and all the rest of it are irrelevant.
David, is he right? I mean, all anybody who wants to buy Aer Lingus can do is say, here's what we'll pay you. In terms of promises about what they'll do at Heathrow slots, or indeed anything else, you can't keep them to it, can you?
Well, I think that the only thing that IAG could possibly do would be to issue some sort of growth plan saying this is our plan. So in other words, what we will do is that we will send more traffic from, for instance, the UK into Ireland. We'll be using Cork, Shannon, Dublin, an awful lot more. This is why it will be beneficial, because I guess in a sense that the slots, the Heathrow slots are worth a few hundred million. Some people would argue that perhaps Willie Walsh is only really interested in those slots, but in effect he's actually buying those slots at a very, very high price because he's offering in excess of 1.3 billion euro for Aer Lingus. So clearly, if this is going to work, he is going to actually have to get an awful lot of additional benefit for buying Aer Lingus, and with that additional benefit he would have to provide a significant growth plan. Obviously the trade unions have pointed out that this could result in some job losses. There would be some overlaps in terms of back office functions like maintenance, procurement, IT, and in fact the Unite Trade Union has said that it could result in excess of 1,000 job losses. We don't know Willie Walsh's full plans. We don't know what growth plan he has. We don't know his plans for all these slots. And in a way, that's part of his problem, because he's now got to set about a significant job of communication, communicating with the employees, communicating with the Irish state, to a certain extent the Irish public, communicating with the Irish government as well, and Ryanair. And the Ryanair thing is interesting, because with an offer of this level, Ryanair could get back all the money that they invested in Aer Lingus shares in the first place, which allows them to save face if they do accept an offer. But also, there is an overlap of some routes between Aer Lingus and British Airways. If British Airways is asked to exit some routes to address competition concerns, that leaves the door open for Michael O'Leary to take an opportunity of opening up on those routes.
David, thank you for that. We'll have more on this story later in the programme. That's David Murphy.
Red Sea published details of polling it's been conducting in the Sunday Business Post yesterday. Red Sea has been asking people about their party political voting intentions and their view of the marriage referendum in the poll. Fine Gael is up 3, as is Labour. Fianna Fáil remains on 19%. Sinn Féin is down 4 and Independents are down 2 as well. Richard Colwell is Managing Director of Red Sea and is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
We'll talk about the party political aspect of things in a moment, but the marriage referendum, it would appear from the polling details you published yesterday that the apparent support levels are not quite as strong as many may have thought.
Yeah, well, I think when we've been coming up to a referendum in the past, what we've seen is if you ask people how they're going to vote a long way out from the referendum, what they tend to say is what they feel is the kind of general theme in the public at that time. And so it was a decision by us to actually try and look at that a bit more closely and understand, you know, is this really as strong a support as has been seen in many polls running up to this stage? So what we tried to do was to look at those who said they were going to vote yes in the referendum and understand whether they had any reservations towards the topics that might be brought up during the campaign. When we did that, what we saw was that actually the, if you like, secure support, those who didn't have any reservations about things like adoption by gay couples or same-sex marriage in general, was actually less than the top-line figures suggested. What you end up with is maybe less than half of all adults who actually say they would support the referendum and don't have any reservations, therefore might not waver in that sense.
So it's just not the fully committed voter. Is that the issue?
Yes, and absolutely. Those people might actually go on to vote yes, but the point is that there is a threat to the yes vote that they might also be persuaded by the arguments during the campaign proper to change their mind and vote don't know or no. And that's a typical action that happens during campaigns with referendum, because what you're asking people to do is to change the constitution. And Irish population don't like changing the constitution unless there's a very good valid reason for doing so. So if there's an argument that puts doubt in their mind, what they tend to do is either vote not vote or vote no. And as the campaign goes, that's the more likely shift in support.
For the polling you conducted, if the vote was to take place this week?
If the vote was to take this week and there was no more arguments at all, then it would probably pass. But if there was a big campaign with a lot of arguments and people became uncertain with it, then there's a chance it might not.
On the party political side of things, if you look at it on the face of it, not huge figures, but some hope for optimism if you were based in government buildings.
Yeah, well, after several months during the end of last year of declines for both government parties, I think there'll be relief that there is an increase again this month. Obviously, the problem for the government parties has been announcing a budget of the first non-austerity budget, but then actually not anyone seeing any benefit from that until this month. So there is an argument to say that people have started to see the impact of the budget in their pay packets, and that has had a positive response. And the other point to make is that, you know, the government parties tend to do better when there has been less news, if you like, or less political news in the agenda, which has happened obviously over the over January and the Christmas period, and therefore they quite often benefit in the first month of the year as well.
So it's just people haven't been hearing about what they've been doing.
Potentially.
Again, while we talk about hope, it's a relative term. If the figures which were turned out in the poll you published yesterday for government, it would be wipeout.
It would be pretty damaging, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Labour Party is still down 10%, half what it achieved at the last election. And Fine Gael are also down quite considerably. I mean, it would be a difficult decision as to how you would form a government.
OK, Richard Colwell, Managing Director of Red Sea, thank you for coming in to
thank
us.
You.
And Darren Frehill is here with the Sports News. Morning, Darren.
Good morning to you, Gavin. Hurricane Fly clinched a record fifth Irish champion hurdle by beating his old rival Jeski at Leopardstown yesterday. The 11-year-old, trained by Willie Mullins and ridden by Ruby Walsh, has won all 10 of his races at the venue. Now, the win also extends his remarkable world record of Grade 1 wins to 22. Let's hear from the winning trainer, Willie Mullins.
Absolutely fantastic. Did it, you know, I mean, they set out to outgun him today and make it the pace from the front, and he was outpaced halfway down the back, but when push came to shove, he was the one that was able to do it and jumped immaculately over the last, and that last jump winning weight.
Were you a little bit nervous down the back?
Oh, absolutely, because I didn't know how far he was, how well he was going.
Well, he went pretty well. What an incredible performance that was. And we'll be joined by the jockey, Ruby Walsh, to reflect on that race win at 8:35. Leinster are the only Irish province through to the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup. Their draw away to Wasps on Saturday was enough to set up a home meeting against Bath in the last eight. And should they progress, there'll be a way to either Toulon or Wasps in the semi-finals. Munster ended their Champions Cup campaign on a high. They had a 65-10 victory over Sale. Connacht will meet Gloucester in the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup, and should they make it through to the semi-finals, they would meet either Exeter or Newcastle on Irish soil. I'm joined on the line by RTÉ analyst Tony Ward. Good morning, Tony.
Morning, Darren.
Tony, will Leinster be happy with the way the draw has worked out for them?
Oh, without doubt. I think I thought they played terribly well for 40 minutes on Saturday, and then lost their way a little bit in the second half, honestly. So they were hanging on for dear life. So the way it's panned out with a home quarter final, because I guess overnight they would have thought they would have been travelling. So it's a good one too to have Bath at home. So I think on balance they'd be very, very happy at the outcome from the weekend.
Mm. Picking up on a very interesting article by Brian Moore in the Telegraph online this morning. He says England have four teams in the quarterfinals, France have three, and Ireland and the Celtic Nations have just the one, which is Leinster. And he's wondering, is this a quirk of circumstance or something more? What do you think?
Well, time will tell, obviously, and there has to be concern over the salary cap, and I think private investment is another issue that needs to be addressed. But, like, if you look back over the years, really it's been Munster and Leinster that's been, you know, charting the course for the Celtic League teams in the latter stages of the former Heineken Cup, now Champions Cup. Ulster occasionally, Ospreys, maybe Cardiff. But, like, it's always been dominated by the English and French sides anyway. But there's no doubt that there is a financial gap at the moment, and that's what Brian is alluding to. So, yeah, it could be a problem. Time will tell. But I'm happy where Leinster are at the moment, and I really believe they're in with a chance in this year's competition, strangely enough.
Let's hope you're right. What about Connacht? Incredible performance on Saturday night in France, Tony. Do you give them a sporting chance in the Challenge Cup?
I do, and I do for... I wish I wasn't outlining this reason. I do because there's no Champions Cup place on offer through the Challenge Cup. As you know, the final place is really a playoff between the top 14 and Premiership, which is a pity. So there's no great incentive beyond winning the Cup in itself. But I think at this point in their development, that is something Connacht need badly. That said, it's a very difficult one to have to go to Kingsholm, one of my favourite grounds, and obviously the Shed support there. But I think there's a substance to Connacht at the moment. I know they've had a little blip of late, but I really believe they're in with a chance too. And I'm optimistic about Leinster and Connacht going forward to April.
Let's hope you're right. Tony Ward, thanks for taking the call this morning. And the Leinster coach, Matt O'Connor, joins me in an hour's time. In Gaelic games, Dublin's footballers beat Kildare 24 points to 19 after extra time to clinch the Bord na Mona O'Byrne Cup. It's their first win in the competition since 2008. Roscommon ended their 16-year wait for success in the Connacht FBD League. They beat Galway 4-8 to 1-12. In hurling, Galway overcame Offaly 2-22 to 1-13 in the Walsh Cup. But the bad news for the tribesmen is that Joe Canning broke his finger in that particular game. The Galway manager is Anthony Cunningham.
It's located, probably fractured, small fingers, probably a couple of weeks as well. It's just fortunate. It's awful, awful hard on players. Like, they train so hard and then they want to play every Sunday and then they pick up injuries. So I suppose if there's one thing that is so disappointing for everybody is that you see players injured. But, you know, hopefully it'll be okay in a few weeks.
A little bit of a setback there for Anthony and his management team. Dublin overcame Antrim 28 points to 2-12. Leash beat Wexford 4-18 to 1-19. Now, Arsenal are through to the fifth round draw of the FA Cup following a 3-2 win away to Brighton. Aston Villa overcame Bournemouth 2-1, and West Ham have booked their place in the next round thanks to a 1-0 win against Bristol City. No big shock so far this morning at the Australian Open. Defending champions Stan Wawrinka, Serena Williams and Dominika Chiblikova all through to the quarterfinals. Bertram Allen claimed second place at the prestigious World Cup Grand Prix in Zurich yesterday, and that result means he's now gained enough points to qualify for the World Cup final in America in April. Do join me again for more sport in an hour's time.
Back to Greece now, where, as you've been hearing, an alliance of parties who are promising to end 5 years of austerity and renegotiate the terms of their multi-billion euro bailout have won a huge victory in a general election. Syriza have won almost enough seats to rule on their own, we'll know for sure later, but the centrist parties who have run modern Greece have been decimated and 40-year-old Alexis Tsipras will be Prime Minister. So why did Greece choose, and choose so overwhelmingly, a radical left party that many EU leaders warn will wreck Greece and cause chaos in the EU? I've been asking Elena Panaritis, former MP, World Bank economist and advisor to the Prime Minister.
It's really a desperate vote and a very well thought out vote, frankly. It's not a reaction vote, but it is a desperate vote because the Greek voters for the last 5 years, they've gone through two national election votes and a couple votes related to local governments and one European Union vote. And they tried in all those elections to give one more chance to the traditional political parties. And they failed. The political party system has failed. I believe, the Greek people basically voted for a change. Now you're going to tell me, is Syriza not a traditional political party? It's definitely not. It does represent a traditional ideology, but it has never been a party per se. It has always been, if you like, community of ideas. And it always was representing about 3 to 4% in parliament. The fact that this party has, in less than 2 years, gone to 37% of the popular vote, it's beyond a win. It's really an extraordinary success.
Syriza say that they want a restructuring of the debt deal, a further write-down, a debt conference. What if the EU say no, if Germany says no, if Greece's creditors say no, no more write-down, no debt deal, pay what you owe us? What then?
Well, they won't be able to pay and will default, period. So this is not really a situation that is in conversation, frankly, because it's not economically logical to say no. You know what happens in this part of the world, which is surprising me tremendously? I've been an economist with the World Bank since 1991. I have never seen an economic crisis of the sort that we have gone through that has not been handled with a very serious combination of debt restructuring and institutional reforms. I am completely surprised with the fact that we confuse and collude the political leadership with the economic leadership of the European Union and the euro. There should not be such a confusion. The political leadership should be leading political leadership, and the economic should be leading economics. The central bank should have, since 2008, with a big crisis, decide very clearly with one plan A, how do we get out of the crisis? Instead, we've been running with plan C, which is buying time. Let's meet a little bit and waste some time in Brussels with commission meetings. 5 years down the line, European Union GDP growth zero for 5 years plus.
Elena, what would you say to countries like Ireland who are watching what's happening in Greece with interest and will watch to see what will happen in any debt renegotiations with interest? Could it have implications for here?
Of course. I would not only be Ireland, I would look at Greece as a canary in the coal mine and start very quickly, do structural reforms, which means simplify your productive capacity fast so you have innovation and creativity and entrepreneurship continue to grow in your country. And do restructure debt on the side of debt-to-equity swaps. That would be the best way to go about it. Restructuring debt doesn't mean complete 100% debt forgiveness, but it does mean a whole series of menus of how we turn sovereign debt into equity investments. Look at what happened in Latin America in the 90s. We had a whole series of Brady bonds that were put in place so that the Latin American countries would get on their feet and run again. And look at what happens in Latin America now, and just turn around the Atlantic to see what's happening in Europe. Latin America is growing with an 8% growth rate for the last 15 to 16 years. And as I said, we're just, I don't know if we will continue to exist or we'll simply implode.
That's Elena Panaritis, Greek commentator and former Greek MP, speaking to us in the last hour. We hope to hear later in the programme from the man who could be the next Greek finance minister. That's all coming up later. It's now 7:46.
Let's look now at the wider implications of the new government in Greece that is about to take power. Could it spell changes in the eurozone, and is Brussels capable of adapting? As if on cue, the ratings agency Standard & Poor's has published a study. It's entitled European Sovereign Credit Worthiness Might Diminish If Eurosceptics Take Power. Frank Gill is Senior Director with Standard & Poor's and is on the line. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
From the title of the report, it sounds like you've made your mind up already.
No, what the report does is it looks at parties which are seeing their approval ratings increase and which are advocating two broad categories of Eurosceptic policies. You have parties like Syriza in Greece, Podemos in Spain, and also, to some extent, Sinn Féin, which are advocating they're anti-austerity, so they want to increase public spending. And generally, they're advocating defaulting or restructuring debt. And then the second variety of Eurosceptic party would be those which are actually in favor of either exiting the Economic and Monetary Union, like the National Front in France, Cinque Stelle in Italy, also Lega Nord in Italy, or they're advocating exiting the European Union, which would be the Danish People's Party and UKIP in the UK. What we're suggesting is that were these parties to come into power, clearly the probability of default would increase, and that's what we're in the business of doing. We assess the probability, not the advisability of default. The advisability of default is a different issue, of course.
And what are you finding specifically with regard to how you're talking about credit worthiness? What are you finding? Or what are you claiming?
Well, clearly what we're suggesting is that for the second category, were a country to leave the euro area, then default would be an inevitability because, for example, say a country left the euro area, a net debtor country with large net external debt owed to non-residents, then clearly their new currency, whatever currency they floated, would depreciate, let's say hypothetically 50% in real terms. Overnight, their debt to GDP burden would double. So it would be extremely difficult for them to service currency, which would be in foreign currency now because euro would become their foreign currency. They would probably have to impose capital controls. Hmm. They would perhaps have difficulty funding imports of necessities like fuel. Now, the first category is interesting because on the one hand, they're anti-austerity and they're in favor of defaulting on debt, some of which is bilateral debt. So it's debt from their European partners, other countries to them. But you know, they're also very much in favor of remaining within the monetary union.
There's something else you're saying. You're saying that Eurosceptic parties, if they get into government, are likely just to soften their stance. On what do you base that other than your view of Eurosceptic parties?
On the macroeconomic necessity, in particular, of ensuring that your banking systems have access to the lender of last resort, which is the ECB. So when banking systems don't have access to commercial financing, what they do is they get funding from the ECB, some of which is ELA, Emergency Liquidity Assistance, which is made and is being made as we speak to the Greek banking system because substantial deposit outflows have occurred over the last month, partly because of the uncertainty of political change.
All right. Frank Gill, Senior Director with Standard & Poor's. Thank you for speaking to us this morning. Almost 7 minutes to 8 o'clock.
It's a busy morning on the corporate activity front. Aer Lingus's board is considering an improved €1.3 billion offer from British Airways owner IAG. Having been knocked back at €2.30 and €2.40 per share, IAG has made a revised offer of €2.55 per share, including a 5-cent cash dividend. Separately, the US private equity fund Lone Star has tied up a £680 million, that's €910 million, deal to buy the Jury's Inns hotels chain from a consortium including Ulster Bank and the Oman Investment Fund. Irish expats working in the UK, the US, Canada and Australia are among the beneficiaries of the ECB's quantitative easing programme. How so? Well, the euro weakness, which results from Eurozone central banks buying up government debt and pumping €60 billion a month into the single currency area, means anyone with foreign currency to send back home is literally quids in at present. Brian Monaghan is CFO with the Irish company Currency Fair. Brian, tell us, what have you experienced since we started seeing this euro weakness prior to and in the immediate aftermath of that announcement from the ECB?
Hi, Connor. Thanks for having me on the show. Well, as you mentioned, it's a great it's a great opportunity for Irish expats abroad to send money back home and get great rates. So what we're seeing is record weeks. These past couple of weeks, we've seen record weeks with money being transferred back home. It's roughly double what we've been seeing at the start of December. There's probably two main reasons why we're seeing this. The first one is our customers are quite exchange rate savvy. So they look at the markets, they see the rates, they see that the euro is falling a lot, and they're kind of getting good rates on the back of that. The second one is a lot of customers, they're looking for rates, specific rates at key levels. So for example, one Aussie dollar is worth 70 cents at the moment. So they've been sitting on those rates, and with our marketplace, you can actually ask for a rate, and the euro has gone through a lot of those key rates in the past week or so. So for those two main reasons, we're seeing a lot of customers transferring back numbers, well, record numbers for us.
So you're seeing a lot of currency being transferred back into here and back into euros. Where's it coming from?
For us, it's primarily from Australia, the UK, Canada. As you mentioned at the outset there, that's where we see a lot of Irish expats sending money back home from. But I suppose in for other companies it would be different, but that's where a lot of our Irish expats are.
And in terms of the interaction that you'd have with expats, just maybe explain a little bit about what you do and how it is that you come to know that these are Irish people working abroad sending money home.
Oh, sure. Like when you sign up, we have to verify who you are and go through all our KYC checks and
know your customer.
Yeah, exactly. Know your customer checks. So we'd have a pretty good handle that they're Irish people who are living abroad. On the back of that, we'd have a good customer profile on when they exchange and their behaviours behind that. So, as I mentioned, a lot of like our customers are exchange rate savvy, and I suppose that's kind of why they'd use us instead of paying the kind of hidden bank fees. So just to get a better rate. So we kind of see that when the euro weakens like this, like it has weakened in the past couple of weeks fairly dramatically, that they do tend to exchange more. They're more rate sensitive than time sensitive. They can wait.
And can you give us an idea in terms of volume or the overall amounts of money that we're talking about here? How much are you transacting at the moment?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, it's roughly double what we were doing in December. We're doing near 7 million a day there the past in the past week, 7 million euro being transferred. So they're really big numbers for us, which is really good growth. Like as a fast growing startup, you know, we have been growing heavily, but this has surpassed all of our expectations in the past month, which is keeping the ops team busy.
You'll certainly have Mario Draghi on your Christmas card list then, by the sounds of it. Brian Monahan, CFO of Currency Fair. The euro sticking with that, trading at $1.12 this morning and 74.5 pence. Sterling.
Good morning. Well, it's a chilly start and a rather cold and fresh day will follow with sunny spells and some scattered showers in the north and northwest. Highest temperatures 7 to 9 degrees with fresh west to northwest breezes stronger around the north coast, but the winds will ease later in the day. And tonight's going to be dry apart from a little drizzle affecting the north coast. There'll be clear spells in the east and south allowing it to turn cold here as temperatures dip to 2 or 3 degrees with a touch of ground frost and a few mist or fog patches, but increasing cloud in the west and northwest will keep it a little less cold and with frost unlikely. Tomorrow then will bring some patchy drizzle to the west and north, but it will be mainly dry elsewhere with a few brighter spells in the southeast, though overall a cloudy day. And during the late afternoon and evening, more persistent rain will move in from the west. It will turn a bit milder tomorrow with outbreaks of rain becoming widespread tomorrow night, but this will be followed by much colder, showery weather on Wednesday. It'll be very blustery with the showers turning wintry later in the day. In fact, for Wednesday night and the rest of the week, it will be bitterly cold as a strong and blustery northwest airflow becomes established. It's going to be windy or very windy with frequent wintry showers giving falls of sleet and snow. And there will be accumulations of several centimetres of snow in many parts of the country, with higher amounts over hills in the north and west. So some disruption is quite likely. But there will be some winter sunshine at times too, though of course with the wind chill and daytime temperatures only 3 to 6 degrees at best, and the nights will be freezing or several degrees below with frost and ice. And over the weekend it will continue bitter as the airflow turns more northerly with further hail, sleet and snow showers, but good dry sunny periods as well, especially inland, and severe frosts and icy roads again by night. Not much for us to worry about this morning, but still pretty chilly today. A bright, fresh day to come. Good sunny spells and just a few well-scattered showers in the north and west. That's it for now. A very good morning.